I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Joining us now, longtime NFL quarterback and color analyst for the Utah Tech broadcast with Rod Zundel. It is Jay Schrader, kind enough to join us. Jay, how are you?
Hey, Jay.
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing well. Doing well. Talk us through this last three-game winning streak. I know you're getting really good play at quarterback over this last three-game stretch. Is that one of the reasons why you feel like Utah Tech's been able to string three together here?
Oh, there's no question about it. They run the spread and shred offense. So you've got to have a quarterback that protects the football, takes care of it, takes the shots down the field. That's what they like to do. But it's also got to be protective. And that's what Victor's done the last few weeks. And it's been very successful, no question.
Has there been anything else through this three-game winning streak? Did somebody else get back healthy? Has there been any other kind of infusion of talent in through this three-game winning streak?
There really hasn't been any infusion of talent. The bottom line is, early in the year, they would make costly penalties at horrible times. You know, that would take away big plays or cost them big yardage at certain times. They're just playing smarter, better football. That's really what it comes down to. And it's really proven when, you know, they're not playing behind the chains anymore. Early in the season, they were always behind the chains. Now, you know, they're in front of it, and they're taking some shots, and it's fun to watch, and it's tough to stop, I can tell you that.
Is it Gabalis, Victor Gabalis or Gabalis?
Victor Gabalis is the quarterback.
Okay. So the last
couple of weeks, they've had, you know, big play out of receivers, a couple of different receivers. The run game has been phenomenal, okay? Qualy Conley has been exceptional in the run game. So they put it all together, and they're playing some good football right now.
So as a guy who played that position and played it at a really high level, all of a sudden he turns it on over the last three games. He's got nearly, you know, over 1,100 yards, 12 touchdowns, only one interception. Does, as a quarterback, does it suddenly just kind of click or the game slows down? What do you think the element to it, to his game, to being able to play at such a high level right now?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think he's come in right now after, you know, he had some early season difficulties, no question about it. And I think he was struggling. I think he was pressing. I think early in the season he was trying too hard to make the big play in this instead of letting the game come to him. The game has come to him, and it definitely has slowed down. He's made better decisions. He's thrown the ball away on occasion when he has to. So it's just a matter of overall better quarterback play. And as I said, when you run the spread and shred offense, man, you got to have a quarterback that, you know, is going to be protective of that football, because they're throwing it a bunch. There's no question about it.
Jay, how do you think this team feels about coming to Lavelle Edwards Stadium to take on the BYU Cougars?
I think they're totally excited. You know, I really do. I think the Cougars present a whole nother challenge. It's a D1 program that has been established that everybody knows, you know, from around here and all that. But you got a bunch of guys that weren't maybe recruited or thought of as D1 players, and now they get a chance to go play. And they're playing good football. They're excited about it. I think they're going to be excited about coming up to Provo and playing.
You feel like something's brewing down there, that now that you got the quarterback situation settled, that this team could really build something special going into next year?
I think so, yeah. And, you know, they're so young in this Division I process. I think they're doing very well. And it's hard when you lose and you lose, you know, dumb ways by making your own mistakes. And they've gotten out of their own way. They're starting to make plays. Guys are doing things that, you know, are fun to watch. And there's some pretty good athletes down there, no question about it. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see them, you know, rise up to the challenge to play BYU. It's no question.
So, Jay, how are you feeling about the Las Vegas Raiders and what's going on right now with their coaching situation, everything?
You know, look, super disappointed, okay? The guys that are supposed to be making plays and playing better are just not doing it. Everybody that, you know, you counted on, you looked over the last couple of years that had some big years, other than Max Crosby, nobody's doing anything exceptional. And that's the problem. You know, you expect these guys to play at a high level. They're NFL players for a reason. They're playing good football. They're just not playing great football, okay? And, you know, they have to be able to play great football. There's too much talent in that league to be okay. And right now they're just being okay, and they're getting beat. And it's not acceptable.
Well, I'm not going to lie. When, you know, we're big fans of Rod Sundel, and when Zippy got that job down there at Utah Tech, and then we see that Jay Schrader's his color analyst, we're like, whoa, the NFL quarterback. How did you end up in St. George?
I lived in St. George from 2005 to 2010. Then I went back to California for a couple of years, and I came back for a year or two. Now I'm living full-time in Vegas. In the course of that time, I've run into Rod and all the guys doing different events. And I've always told Rod, I said, hey, look, I said, if you ever get a gig where you need somebody to come help you or anything else, let me know. And he got the gig there at Utah Tech, and he called me. He's like, hey, you want to come up? I said, absolutely. So I make the trek up every week, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been fun working with Zippy.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jay Schrader joining us right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. All right, so just because we're, you know, we're the three of us, including Lloyd back in studio, we're all about the same age, which means that our NFL experience was the 80s and 90s as kids when we really latched onto the sport. So we got to ask you, just what was it like playing with Bo Jackson?
I'm older than all of you. I'm older than all of you, but what was it like playing with Bo?
Yeah, we got to ask.
Bo was the best athlete I've ever seen in my life, okay? And I played against Dion. But Bo was 235. Bo could do whatever he wanted to do, whenever he wanted to do. You know, we used to run the old student body sweep. And when I first got to the Raiders, they said, hey, we got to play. It's called Bo Reverse Left. And I'm like, okay. It was basically student body right. Everybody went right. Everybody pulled right. And the premise of the play was Bo's going to take three steps to the right, reverse pivot. We've all seen the play. And then he runs left. And I'm looking at the play going, that's never going to work. There's nobody blocking for him. And I went, and we ran it a couple of times. I went, oh, that's why it works, because that's Bo running the ball. And nobody can catch him. So, you know, he was just that good of athlete. He was like the best kid on Pop Warner team when you couldn't catch him. Except he was on the pro level doing it against pro athletes.
What was the dynamic like of having him and Marcus Allen on the same team together?
It was a dynamic. The only the only problem I had is at the time, you know, Al Davis wanted to throw the ball down the field, and I couldn't throw it to those guys out of the backfield very much. You know, I was taught to throw it way down the field. I'm like, I got these two guys, you know. And Mike Shanahan, when I first got traded there, Mike was the coach, and I will tell you this, you're in practice, and the DBs, everybody's playing three deep, staying way back, and I'm dumping the ball to the back, but I'm thinking, man, I got Bo, I got Marcus, this is going to be a lot of fun, everything else. Al stops practice, and, you know, he's like, what the hell are we doing? He says, you cannot throw to the backs anymore. You got to throw the ball down the field. And Mike Shanahan and I looked at each other like, uh-oh. that was the start of the demise of Mike Shanahan right there, because philosophies just didn't match up with Al.
So Al Davis would actually step in and stop practice then?
Well, yeah. And here's the thing, you know, don't misconstrue that. Al was a coach. Remember? Al coached. Al knows football.
Yeah.
He's a football guy. He is a football guy that became a coach. He's not a business guy that tried to run a team. He was a football guy. He knew what he was talking about. And he wanted the game to play a certain way. And he told me, he says, look, he says, you're going to take 10 shots down the field. If you connect on three, we score 21 points. Our defense will hold them. We'll win. That was his philosophy. He could have cared less if I went 3 for 10. If those three were 60, 70-yard plays for touchdowns, he'd be happy.
Well, Jay, Scotty and I, we've done our thing. Lloyd Cole is the actual Raiders fan here on the station. We promised Lloyd that he could slip in a question. Lloyd's our producer, and he does an amazing job, and he's all about the Raiders. Lloyd, what do you got for Jay, man?
Jay, first of all, welcome to my show. I really appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for joining. To be honest with you, I told these guys, I wasn't kidding. Like your time period. I became a Raiders fan probably about 86, about at the age of six. And I'm talking Swervin' Mervin Fernandez, Bo Jackson, Marcus Allen, you know, Greg Townsend. I know you got Tim Brown at his rookie year. I just saw
Mervin Sunday at the game.
Yeah. So like, I mean, I grew up like that, like for some weird reason, like that time frame of like between 88 and 92. I have to mention Howie Long, because, you know, the guy was a legend, but that, you know, so that time frame, I mean, that time frame sits in my mind more than any other probably time frame as a Raiders fan for some weird reason. And there's been some hard times, but I mean, my question really was going to be, you know, one, I mean, Scotty asked the question about the dynamic of Bo Jackson and Marcus Allen. That was one of my questions really, but what was it like to play for Al Davis? I mean, the whole Raiders, you know, what attracted me to the Raiders was that, you know, they were the bad boys of the league, you know, the misfits. Like, it was something, something amazing. What was it that was different about the Raiders versus like other places you play, like Washington or, you know, Arizona or the Bengals? What was different? What made, you know, playing for the Raiders so special and Al Davis?
Number one, you're playing for a guy that knew football. So he actually understood the game, knew the game. He also loved his players. Okay. He took care of his players. No doubt about it. He was a player's owner and everything else. He did everything possible to make the players comfortable and the number one priority. And he also was like, look, get it done on Sundays. Period. I mean, the slogan, just win, baby, that just win. Get it done. You know, during the week, let's figure out what we got to do and this, that, and everything else. But get it done on Sundays. He was all about winning on Sundays. And you got no problem with it. That's your job. Go out, win the game on Sunday.
So, and one last thing, because I've cursed my son with being a Raiders fan. He's about to be 8 years old, and I asked him I said, hey, I'm going to have Jay Schrader on the show today. You got something you want me to ask him? And he says, what do they need to do to actually become a good team again? That's essentially what his question was. So what do they need to do, Jay, to get to start winning, to just winning again?
Well, they need to get back to, you know, running the football, play action, and just making plays. Their superstars need to play like superstars, and once they do that, everything will work out. But right now, they're just not doing that.
Well, Jay, we appreciate your time. Enjoy your time up in Provo. Should be a fun one against BYU, and look forward to catching up with you again here soon.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, you got Jay. It. Jay Schrader, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.